Here's a question. What is something really worth? You go through these periods, Beanie Babies being sold for a bunch of money, baseball cards that somebody finds in grandpa's attic. Finding his attic. Coin collectors. What's the worth of something? I mean, for a coin, it's kind of easy. There's a metal behind it, right? You can take the metal, you can melt it down, and there you go. You've got that. But collectors will pay more than that. If it's a rare etching on that coin, you know, they'll pay a ton of money for that. Or baseball cards, they'll pay a ton of money. What is something worth? It's a good question. One we're going to try to tackle on today's show. Live from the three-room apartment above Uncle Jack's garage, welcome to another episode of Money in the Morning. Hey there, Stackers. I'm Joe Saul-Sehy, Average Joe Money on Twitter. And this is the show that we do live in front of a Facebook studio audience. Makes me nervous, makes me excited to do it. We take two headlines ripped from the press. We ask our friends here hanging out with us what they think about these. I'll comment on what they mean to your wallet. And then, as if that's not enough, we'll also put the two together at the end of the show to give you a big idea that you can take home with you for the rest of your day. Money in the Morning today is brought to you by Lemonade. Forget everything you know about insurance. Instant everything. Killer prices. Big heart. Lemonade for home and renter's insurance. An amazing process when I got Lemonade on this particular place we're living now. I'll go into that in a second. StackyBenjamins.com/lemonade for more. Cool thing about Lemonade, takes you about 90 seconds. So if you're doing what you should do and you're comparing prices, great thing to do here at the end of the year. Don't forget Lemonade. StackyBenjamins.com/lemonade. All right. We got a ton of fun on today's show. So why don't we get this party started?
Here are today's Money in the Morning headlines.
We talk kind of, I wouldn't say frequently, about cryptocurrencies, but I love the discussions about cryptocurrencies. Back in January, it was all, the world is, this rocket ship's taken off and you are not going to be on it. So you have to buy it. And now in December, people saying, oh God, what have I done? Why did I buy that? People I know that are close to me sold in January, made a bunch of money, like not a little money, a lot of money on a small investment. In some cases, just a couple $1,000s netted well over $100,000 because they got in early and then they sold when everybody else was buying. Bitcoin is one of those cryptocurrencies. If you're not familiar with cryptocurrencies, these are new ish currencies, digital currencies, not tied to a single government. So it's a way to exchange so that you're able to exchange more quickly. You don't have to worry about interactions like the Fed and the Fed meeting and what that means for dollars versus pounds versus yen versus the euro, all this stuff. You don't have to worry about any of that. Instead, it's just a universal currency. And now there's lots of them. And I was reading the other day that several per day right now are going belly up. They're gone. Completely worthless. And so that leads me to kick off today's show with an opinion piece that I found on MarketWatch. This is written by Atulia Sarin and says it's an opinion piece. Bitcoin is close to becoming worthless. Well, Bitcoin's trading what? Just less than $6,000. I found that interesting. To put it calmly, I found that interesting. But what do they mean? It's going to zero. Well, let's dig in. The piece reads, just 1 year has passed since Bitcoin enthusiasts forecasted the cryptocurrency would hit a price of $1 million. But that was then, with the price of Bitcoin having fallen almost 80% off its peak and now trading well below the support level of $6,000. Everyone's wondering where it goes from here. The answer is, remember, this is an opinion piece, a swift and painful drop to zero. In a MarketWatch column I wrote last April, I explained that what it would take for Bitcoin to become worthless. Bitcoin's getting close to that point. As I argued, once Bitcoin's price falls below its cost of mining, the incentive to mine will deteriorate, thrusting Bitcoin into a death spiral. That is, without the mining activity supporting the ledger that maintains the records of who owns what, Bitcoin is, after all, a set of encrypted numbers that cannot establish the ownership of anything, Bitcoin will become worthless. A typical asset has a set of cash flows, and its value is driven by investors' expectations of those cash flows. Bitcoin has no cash flows. In that respect, it's more like gold in that its value is driven to some extent by its desirability and potential uses, but mostly by its cost of mining. While there are many estimates of Bitcoin's cost of mining, most suggest it's close to $5,000 a coin. Furthermore, even though traditional commodities like gold require significant investments, with limited technical knowledge and capital, anyone can mine Bitcoins. Thus, the price of Bitcoin must be close to the fully loaded cost of mining it, meaning you're modestly compensated for your time and capital outlay. So one would expect the price of Bitcoin to fluctuate somewhere around that point. Moreover, one additional complication, unlike gold, which probably due to a historical accident is universally accepted as a store of value, Bitcoin's a digital commodity with no such universal acceptance as a store of value. While the original buyers and miners of Bitcoin were true believers in the paradigm shift they thought it promised and were willing to make the necessary investments for future gains, the more recent buyers and miners have been run-of-the-mill, greed-driven investors. Their greed has been further fueled by futures trading, which was introduced when Bitcoin prices were booming and the sun appeared to be perpetually rising on the horizon. With Bitcoin prices well above the cost of mining, they saw an obvious arbitrage opportunity. Mine Bitcoin and sell it for a higher price in the futures market for guaranteed arbitrage profits. Not surprisingly, traditional investors took notice, with many investing in mining operations and the Bitcoin they were expected to be generated by mining were sold in the futures market. As more arbitrageurs entered the market to exploit this opportunity, Bitcoin prices were pushed down close to their cost of mining with a small return and led to a long, in Bitcoin world, period of stable prices. It also changed the complexion of the miners, and a higher proportion of them are now fair weather miners looking for a quick buck who would quickly disappear once the opportunity dissolves. Yet, the cost of mining Bitcoin is not a fixed dollar amount. There is a feedback mechanism in mining any commodity that applies to Bitcoin. As the price of Bitcoin increases, new miners enter the market, increasing the effort required to mine a Bitcoin, as its reward will be shared among a larger group of miners. Similarly, when the price of Bitcoin falls and miners exit, the cost of mining decreases. However, the number of miners cannot fall below a certain level because without the miners providing the computing power to maintain the ledger, the Bitcoin blockchain will not remain viable. Mining at a cost higher than the cost at which you can sell in the futures market destroys value. So any rational investor, even one who strongly believes in the price of Bitcoin and thinks it will rebound, has no incentive to mine if the cost of mining is higher than the future price and is better off buying in the futures market. And unlike gold, which can retain its value even if mining activity stops, Bitcoin can have no value absent the mining activity that maintains the ledger of who owns it. Absent the mining activity, Bitcoin's just a set of encrypted numbers with no value. It's pretty ugly. And I accidentally clicked off the article, which is what happens when we do these live. Death spiral. This piece continues. So it appears Bitcoin's now entering a death spiral. The price continues to drop. The cost of mining doesn't fall correspondingly. The cost of mining will algorithmically decrease, but not necessarily to the same extent as the decline in prices. Bitcoin will quickly go to zero. Bitcoin proponents will argue that Bitcoin's prices dropped by large percentages before, except this most recent decline is different in three significant ways. First, the magnitude of the recent decline dwarfs the magnitudes of past declines. Second, losers in the recent decline are new investors who will likely retreat until there's more clarity around Bitcoin's use cases. Third, the futures markets have changed the game, enabling miners to estimate their mining losses and profits at the outset. If you can buy in a futures market at a price below my mining cost, why mine for a sure loss? Many will argue that Bitcoin becoming truly worthless is extreme. Sure, looking at some memorable fads and bubbles, tulips still trade for $10 a bunch. Beanie Babies are fairly priced at $5. And it looks as though the blockchain economy is here to stay, where many of our transactions will be processed on the blockchain and use cryptocurrency for daily transactions. Indeed, while the world may forever be indebted to Satoshi Nakamoto for giving us a viable cryptocurrency, Bitcoin may cease to exist. An improved coin might evolve, or governments might start issuing cryptocurrencies. History is full of examples of innovative companies that went bankrupt and the Me Too companies becoming the best investments. And after all, I can still give my wife a bouquet of tulips and make her happy. And I can still give Beanie Babies to my grandchildren to play with. But what am I going to do with a set of numbers that I cannot prove makes me an owner of anything? By the way, Atulia Sarin is a professor of finance at Santa Clara University and has written on currencies in his book, Foundations for Multinational Financial Management. Just so you, if in case you wonder who the writer is of this piece. I will admit that I'm not a cryptocurrency expert, and I don't fully understand everything that I just read to you. And you probably don't understand all of it either. Here's a few key points, though, that I can glean from this. I gleaned that a big part of the market in Bitcoin right now are arbitragers. And arbitragers are people that see an opportunity on one exchange, an opportunity on another exchange, and there's a discrepancy, and I can make some easy money. And when that easy money dissolves, those people go away. And I also agree that some of the get-rich-quick people that are still hanging on from January are going to go away. In January and February, our other podcast, the Stacking Benjamins podcast, which normally is in the, I don't know, 10 to 15 ranking on iTunes and on Apple Podcasts, rather, fell to like 25 and 30. And the reason wasn't that our podcast got worse. There were so many new Bitcoin podcasts. And without getting into the process of how podcasts work, but there's an algorithm kick that Apple Podcasts gives new podcasts that help them begin their show. So often a brand new show will appear above ours and then will slowly come below in the rankings. Rankings based on a lot of stuff. But there is a kind of a little nudge that Apple gives to new podcasts. There were so many of them, and they were so popular in January and February that our ranking went to about 30. I mean, there were so many, 15, 20. It was ugly. And when you see that many new podcasts, it shows you that what this gentleman's writing is absolutely true. There's a bunch of traditional investors who are looking to get rich in a hurry. And guess what's happened? You've lost 80% of your value now. How much longer are you going to hang on? And so instead of having the miners you had at the beginning, now you have these other people. So I get that those people back out. I get that in my little brain. And then the second thing that I get also is this idea of viability as a currency, which, listen, that's what Bitcoin was created for in the first place, right? Viability as a currency. And you look at the speed of Bitcoin transactions versus the speed of some of the new and improved players in cryptocurrency. Don't know if you tried to buy or sell Bitcoin, but it got really, really slow and a lot slower than a lot of the other currencies. And you see, I mean, we had a gentleman from a cryptocurrency called Kinesis come on, where they tied the value of it to gold, kind of looking at some of these same things. What is a string of numbers worth? What is it worth? Gold you can hold in your hand. And even if people stop mining it, at very least, there's this tradability aspect of it. Same with baseball cards, with Beanie Babies. There's a tradability aspect. There's some viable market. If nobody ends up using Bitcoin and they instead go to other cryptocurrencies and a lot of your miners leave, and I have to confess, the whole part about falling below mining would require me to understand how the futures market works in Bitcoin, and I do not understand any of that. But I get where he's going, and I trust where he's going based on the other facts in the piece. Bitcoin could very well go to zero. Do I know that to be the case? No. And I think we can back away a little bit, though, from Bitcoin into this. When you make an investment, I think understanding the measurements around that investment are really important. What I really enjoyed about this piece was the discussion on whatever data you have with Bitcoin And when you discuss the speed of mining and tracking the speed of mining, and you're also tracking the futures market and the viability of and speed of transactions and the type of investors holding something, the more data you have, the more measurements you have, the better you're going to be as an investor. Now, the bad news is most people buy a stock. Why? Or buy an investment even because their buddy did it. I mean, I know a ton of people who bought Bitcoin back in January and in December because of the fact it was going to the moon. Didn't understand a thing about it, but everybody else was doing it. Understand the measurements around your investment, and I think you're going to make a better play. Bitcoin will continue to be volatile. We all know that. Is it going to zero? I don't know. I do think there's a lot of head nod on my part, though, from this piece. Don't think cryptos are going away. Hear me clearly. I don't think cryptos are going anywhere. Bitcoin? Maybe. And maybe the new ones are more set up to do the same thing better. Let's say hello to our friends who are hanging out with us on Facebook, our live Facebook audience. By the way, if you want to join the Facebook audience, head to facebook.com/iStackBenjamins. And we appear at random times to do these. We do not have a set schedule on when we record these, but generally it's 3 days a week. And our friend Paul from Cash Crunch Games is here. He said, FOMO, fear missing out. Man, that was a case in December and January. And I feel like Dr. Phil when I say, how's that working out for you now? Not that good at all. And let's say hi to Scott. Scott says, aside from the cost of production, some things value is determined by what someone is willing to pay for it. Does anything really have an intrinsic value? It's a collective community's faith and belief that there's intrinsic value in X, Y, and Z, which I agree, Scott, which is also why if mining operations slow and the usability of Bitcoin becomes negligible, what are you left holding? Like with gold, you're holding onto this rock that I want. Is there anybody that wants a string of numbers that you hold onto that they don't hold onto? That's why I think they think it's going to zero. Joe's here. Hey, Joe. Joe says, a great name, by the way, Joe, love it. Things are worth what someone else is willing to pay for them. And there's almost always a buyer for everything. But is there a buyer for a set of numbers? That's difficult. Kurt asked, you need a pickaxe to mine Bitcoin. You need a pickaxe that looks a hell of a lot like a powerful computer, big guy. Joe also said, isn't the limited supply of Bitcoin what makes it more valuable? True. It makes it valuable as long as there's a trading and usage for it. Limited supply of Beanie Babies when people thought that had a value. Once people decided that it had no value and the trading ceased, you know, it went back to $5 for a Beanie Baby. Aaron says fracking, hydraulic fracturing is used. Too bad it pollutes. All right. That's funny. That's what they use for Bitcoin is fracking. People fracking Bitcoin. You can see your computer start shaking. All the bunch of computers in Oklahoma start shaking when there's too much Bitcoin mining going on there. Right. That's funny. Good stuff. Let's move on to our second piece now, which comes to us from USA Today. And I wanted to do this piece specifically because I have not lately been able to use
the dumbest headline of the week.
Little, you know, I've got this whole soundboard and I need to press all the buttons. And this button was calling out for me to play it again.
The dumbest headline of the week.
Because I hadn't played it in a while. I mean, whenever I can play
the dumbest headline of the week
and get it out of its rut, let it out, you know, to air. It's like taking the dog for a walk. So I'm very happy to have it here. This was a piece that I just saw, which was going over how much money you've lost so far in this current market downturn. You know, the one that's put the market just barely below zero now? You know that one? Guess how much money you've lost. Now, we're not going to talk about the big run-up or anything. We're going to talk about that. This is great. I dug this piece. This was written by Adam Schell at USA Today. It's funny because, you know, USA Today generally, I have to say, even though it's kind of like the cartoon newspaper in some ways, generally straightforward stuff you don't have an opportunity to really bitch about, you know? But this particular one, I was like, oh, come on, dude. Come on. All right. Don't want to foreshadow too much. I think I already have too much, but let's get into it. Adam Schell writes, 401k, how does the stock market drop affect my retirement savings? All right. That's funny. This is not the piece that we actually wanted. Where is my piece? Nope. This actually is it. Different headline than it had on my Flipboard. Sorry, guys. Everybody's heard, that's what I love again about doing this live. Everybody's heard of sticker shock, but what about account balance trauma? That's a form of distress 401k savers with all their money invested in stocks will likely experience when they peek at their fourth quarter account statements. All right, I'm going to try to hold it in. If you've been watching the stock market slump in the final quarter of 2018, you know it's been a dreary stretch, and that means you can't dodge the financial pain and the losses. By one estimate, the average 401k owner with 100% invested in U.S. stocks is currently sitting on a paper loss of $8,733 since the end of September. That rough estimation takes into account the 8.2% drop this quarter through 11:45 a.m. Wednesday suffered in the S&P 500 and index of large U.S. stocks. And the record 401k average account balance of $106,500 at the end of the third quarter, according to Fidelity Investments analysis of its more than 15 million 401k accounts. Most holders of 401ks will be shell-shocked, said Sungwon Son, an economist and president of SS Economics. Thankfully, only about 8% of 401k investors have all their plan assets invested in stocks, says Megan Murphy, vice president, retirement expert at Fidelity, the Boston-based mutual fund giant. The typical retirement saver, Murphy says, has a more balanced mix of assets that include stocks, bonds, and cash, which reduces risks and helps cap losses. In fact, one half of all 401k investors with accounts at her company now have 100% of their money invested in so-called target date funds, she says. These funds, which are designed to make sure investors have the proper asset allocation, put money in a specific percentage of stocks, bonds, and other assets based on age and number of years left before retirement. These funds get more conservative as investors approach retirement. And while these more balanced age-based funds help smooth out some of the market's bumpy ride, most still hold sizable chunks of stocks and don't completely shield investors from short-term losses. For example, a hypothetical 62-year-old investor who wants to retire in 5 or 6 years will be best served by a fund targeting the year 2025. I am going to chuck my mouse into my computer in a second. By the way, that's totally not true. Fidelity's Freedom 2025 fund, for example, is a 60% weighting in stocks, with the bulk of that invested in U.S. shares, with 36% in bonds and the rest in cash. If an investor in a fund with that asset mix started the fourth quarter with the average balance of $106,500, he or she would still be sitting on a loss of roughly $5,240 for the equity portion of their retirement account. Similarly, someone invested in a fund targeting retirement in the year 2035 with an 87% exposure to stocks would have a loss of $7,598 so far this quarter. Still, Wall Street pros stress that investing for retirement is a long-term endeavor. They say it's important to remember that since you're saving for retirement 10, 20, 30, even 40 years down the road, it makes little sense to panic and get out of the stock market because of one bad stretch. Really? Why did you write this then? Sorry. Staying with it. Despite falling nearly 10% this quarter, the broad S&P 500 is down just 1.4% for the year. Quote, depending on what they own and when they last looked at their balance, investors may not be as shocked as you think, said Kate Warney, investment strategist Edward Jones. For the year, many portfolios will be close to flat. To be sure, 401k investors just looking at the current quarter may see bigger declines, she adds, but they should put them in context by reviewing the longer-term performance, realizing that returns aren't going to be positive every quarter, Warney said. Oh my goodness. Not even dumbest headline. Oh, I got to play it.
The dumbest headline of the week.
Not even dumbest headline. Dumbest article in terms of layout. All of the truth in that whole piece is in the last two paragraphs. And yet, all the fear-mongering crap is at the top of the piece. Oh my goodness. If you read it, I mean, we've been trained over time, and everybody knows this. People that read anything, people that write anything know that you're probably only going to read the first three paragraphs, right? I learned early on, even as a podcaster, my show description, put everything that's really important at the very beginning. So the important thing for you to know right now is having an all-stock portfolio is flipping bad and you lose a ton of money. So go with a target date fund. Holy moly, is that crappy advice? That is incredibly crappy advice. Let's get crazy here, kids. Let's talk about how you should probably do it. Let's put down the drink, Grandma, and instead, let's talk about reality. See, here's the thing. If we actually look at since the last downturn, hell, let's look at since like 1928. If you had an all equity portfolio before this buildup, not just since September, before this buildup, if you've been in the stock market 5, 6, 7, 8 years, let's talk about all the money you made with an all equity portfolio that you wouldn't have made had you been in that overpriced, super expensive, not designed for you target date fund. How much more money would you have made? The answer, a crap load. I almost said something worse. Almost forgot that I was live. Cool thing about recording our other show, Stacking Benjamins, is we can say what we think, and then we go, Steve, take that out. Can't take it out here. But you know what I'm saying. You would have made a ton of money. So are we investing for September till now, or are we investing for a longer period of time? It's important to know your time frame, like they say at the end of the piece. But let's get even more clear here. If you start with your time frame and you work backward from that time frame, and then instead of looking at all of these investments, which confuse the hell out of you, they confuse the hell out of me. I've been doing this now for what, 27 years? They're very confusing. If you instead work backwards and you say, what investments historically serves this time frame? You know what's crazy? You take this huge time frame of investments and with very little research, read Rick Edelman's The Truth About Money. Bam, it's all you got to do. Go to, I don't even know what chapter it is, but somewhere in that book, he's got these investments are great for this time frame. These investments are great for this time frame. Certified financial planner, well-known in the community. I can easily point to them. Go read it. Look at that one piece. It takes this huge range of investments and translates this little bitty range of investments that are best for you. And if you're investing for 20 years, why the hell are you wasting time worried about September till now? And, oh, I lost $8,000 after I made a gajillion the 8 years before that. Oh, it drives me crazy. Start with your time frame. All equity portfolio ain't bad. A lot of people who use an all equity portfolio use what they call a barbell approach. And the barbell approach works this way. You've got all equities and then you have cash on the other end, maybe more cash than usual. You know why? Because it might get bumpy. And if you haven't found your exit point in time and you need money in a time frame that's closer than 5 years away and that money is still in the stock market, well, then you're going to need excess cash. Use a barbell. I get so flipping frustrated. And it's funny that I'm frustrated about USA Today. I can't think of a time I've been frustrated with USA. A lot of times USA Today, I'll roll my eyes and just go, okay, that's cartoon news. This one, seriously, seriously bad. Not great. All right, let's see if the people that are hanging out with me on Facebook agree. Barry's here. Barry says, the great thing about being long on an investment, being long, by the way, for those people that don't understand that terminology, being long means you buy it. Being short means you hope it goes down, just to put it very simply. There's a mechanism by which you actually do a trade where if it goes down, you make money. So being long means you buy it. Great thing about being long as an investment is that your downside's limited 100%, but your upside is unlimited. I've had stock investments go to zero as well. Case of Bitcoin. Oh, Barry's back on Bitcoin. in the case of Bitcoin, I had to believe that most anyone speculating on it understood it was likely to be very volatile. I would think so. But I also think that there was this easy money feeling, Barry. There was this super, super easy money feeling. Tim is here. Tim says, I haven't lost anything, but because I haven't sold anything. Stay the course. If you're looking at the long term, does it matter? If you've got 20 years to go, I will look and I might even say, hey, my all equity portfolio went down 8,500. And without going back into this garbage piece, what was that? Was that $500, $600 more loss on average than it was for one of these baloney other portfolios? Take that loss and then look backwards, and I think that you've gotten rid of it. Kurt's baiting me, says yum, TDF, and also says this time's different. Joe says the gains weren't real yet, so neither are the losses. Evaluating long-term investments on a short-term basis is exactly what makes humans very bad investors. So is this article saying we should sacrifice long-term gains to protect against short-term losses? That's absolutely what it's saying, Joe. Everybody wants to do well right now all the time. And it's amazing. I've met with hundreds of families back in the time that I was a financial planner. And for a lot of these families, that's the first thing that they want to do. How can I have my cake and eat it too? And my job as a good advisor was to say, guess what? You can't. But what we can do, and my friend David Stein on Money for the Rest of Us talks about this pretty eloquently, by the way. David says, look at your biggest horror story and cover up your biggest regret. And we'd have a lot of discussions about behavior and regret. And you certainly want to cover up those. But if you invest with the defensive mentality that way, then listen, an all-stock portfolio isn't for everybody. You're going to have this up and down in an all-stock portfolio. And that's called, and I actually wrote it down, kids. Check this out for those of you playing the home game on Facebook today. You can see on our video, standard deviation. If you look at standard deviation, that's the bounce around that your portfolio is going to have. We got some pros out there going, bounce around? Really, Joe? That's how you're going to define standard deviation? Yes. For today, for a 101, absolutely. Some investments over the short term bounce around very little. You're not going to lose much, but you'll never gain anything. So as an example, for a long-term goal, a savings account's a horrible place to be. Why? Because your little 1.5, let's say you really flex it and you get 2.2%, you're going to have to save almost dollar for dollar for retirement. You need something with a higher standard deviation. Wherever the short term, maybe the potential loss is bigger, but the potential upside also is bigger. So you have a shot at actually getting where you want to go. Compare standard deviation on investments as part of figuring out which one has bigger volatility over time. And certainly over longer periods of time, you're going to go toward investments that have a higher standard deviation and ones that have a lower standard deviation for short-term investments. So what does that mean, Joe? Put that in human speak. What that means is if you know the standard deviation ahead of time on your investments and you know the measurements, you're not going to get as upset because you know, oh, well, that's part of how this game works, right? Know the numbers ahead of time. And it makes it good. And by the way, those numbers are published. If you invest in any ETF or mutual fund, you can go to Morningstar.com and you can look up the MPT statistics, Modern Portfolio Theory statistics, and you'll see a bunch of statistics around beta, which is another risk measure to understand, and around standard deviation. And you'll be able to know how bumpy your flight path is going to be. And that'll get rid of a lot of the fear that you have built up inside your head. All right, man, I'm hot. And not like hot. I'm hot under the collar about this piece. Doesn't happen very much. Let's talk about Lemonade here for just a second, our sponsor for the show, and then we'll get to the big idea because we've got a big, big, big idea today. Lemonade helped me a ton when we rented this little 3-room apartment for the last 6 months, and I'm sad that I'm going away. But you know what's cool is that on my house in Michigan, it was very easy for me to very quickly look at Lemonade. Now, Lemonade didn't win when it came to my house in Michigan, but they did win here, and they won by a lot. The cool thing is it took me 90 seconds in both cases to look at this company. And what's cool about this company, and the reason why I love talking about Lemonade, is because of the fact that their amazing coverage protects the stuff you own at home and everywhere else. And it's called amazing because of the fact that their artificial intelligence works way different than traditional insurers. They work differently on the claims process than other insurers. And if you just take a second and go to stackingbenjamins.com/lemonade, you can look up for yourself just exactly how different this company is. But better yet, you should be looking fairly often, once a year, once every 2 years, at your homeowner's insurance and seeing, or your renter's insurance, and seeing, is there a better rate out there for me? Takes 90 seconds to include Lemonade. stackybenjamins.com/lemonade. Good stuff. All right. Here's our big idea. The big idea is, when it comes to an investment in a crypto like Bitcoin or an investment in the an all-stock portfolio or a target date fund, there's an easy way to solve all these problems. And the easy way is this. And this is our big idea today. Just work backward. If you work backward, start with the end goal, you're going to then set up investments that have the correct standard deviation. You're going to know what the bounce is going to be on your investment portfolio ahead of time. So when it starts bouncing exactly like the statistics say that it can, you're not going to end up reading a USA Today article which says that you're doing it wrong when you're probably doing it right. You're also going to avoid investments that don't fit, which is, by the way, instead of focusing all your energy on choosing the investment that hits it big, instead, cover your downside by making sure you get rid of all these investments that don't fit. You'll invest in Bitcoin with that play money because you believe in the technology. And if you got out in January, February, March, maybe you won. Maybe you won like some people I know and you won big. But you're not playing with the money that you need today, tomorrow, next week. That's gambling. You don't want to do that. Work backward, cover your downside, and I think that's how you win. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us today on Facebook. Thanks to everybody listening. Go stack some Benjamins. Don't go stack some Bitcoin. Go stack some Benjamins. We'll see you next time. Stack some all equity Benjamins. We'll see you next time back here at Money in the Morning.
Money in the Morning is created by Joe Saul Sehi and comes to your ears because of the collective genius of our producer, Richie Rutter-Reese, engineer, Caden Thompson, and a pack of very well-trained ferrets here in the basement. You'll find links to all of our headlines featured on today's show in Joe's Twitter feed at @AverageJoeMoney. I know you already know this too, but Money in the Morning is for entertainment purposes only. You shouldn't act on anything recommended by a bunch of entertainers in a basement without first consulting with your financial advisor and second, having your head examined. Have a headline you'd like us to discuss? Send them to joe@stackingbenjamins.com or put them on our Stacking Benjamins Basement closed Facebook group. This show is copyright 2018 Stacking Benjamins LLC, all rights reserved. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I reserve the right to always say, we'll see you next time back here on Money in the Morning.